Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. It's good to be back with you this week. And on today's program, kids. Now, I know I do this, and I bet you do too. Idealize childhood as a carefree time of life. Some kids don't have that luxury. Some kids travel alone without any adults for thousands of miles to cross the U.S. border. According to the New York Times, Homeland Security expects over 90,000 unaccompanied minors this year. 5 years ago, the number of kids migrating alone was 19,000. By now, you might have seen the leaked pictures on the internet of the conditions in which our country is housing these children. So, what kind of people would allow these kinds of conditions? What about the attitudes of the people who are charged with caring for these children? If a recent tweet by the union representing the Border Patrol is any indication, we might only be able to expect callous indifference. The tweet complains, babysitting, diaper changing, burrito wrapping, cleaning cells, law enforcement? What's that? Never mind that this influx of immigrant children is driven by a humanitarian crisis in their home countries, usually in Central America. Never mind that many of them have journeyed thousands of miles under conditions where rape and death in a multitude of ways is commonplace. And never mind the way they are treated while held by U.S. authorities. In an exclusive interview, I sat down with a person we'll be referring to as Kay. Kay works as a staff member in a facility that holds migrant children who stay for months at a time. Many of them, some as young as 7 years old, have talked to Kay about what the trip north was like. But Kay says the kids say that the most traumatic part of their thousands of miles long journey hasn't been the threat of violence or rape along the way, but instead, the horror of being detained in the United States. In order to protect the children Kay works with, as well as to prevent retaliation against Kay, we have altered Kay's voice. We have agreed to not reveal who you are because, as journalists, our job is to protect our sources. But you have agreed to talk to us. Whose job do you think it is to protect these children?
Right now, it's my personal job to protect them because I am in the environment and I am able to work directly with them. And for me, protecting them, it doesn't mean making sure that they aren't being harmed or anything. It's making sure that emotionally they're being taken care of and that they have a safe place where they can really talk about their experiences. It's everybody's job to protect these kids because ultimately, regardless of where they're from, we all deserve basic human rights that these kids are not necessarily always getting.
Can you tell me what it was like the first time you walked into this place and you realized the work that you were going to be doing? Your first impressions?
I was shocked. When I had gone in for my interview, it was all very open, and they actually invited me to sit down and talk to the kids. So I was really able to connect with them right away. But my first day was a day where we had gotten new intakes in. And when I saw that look on their face of fear, that's when I knew, okay, this is serious work. Like, this is not just another after-school program that I've done or another, you know, this is a very vulnerable set of kids that I'm working with, and that's when I realized this is real work.
What was the look on their faces?
It's kind of like the look that you get when you know that you're going to get in trouble for something, but you don't know what you did wrong kind of thing, or almost kind of like help me face, like, I don't know what's going on.
Do these kids want to talk? Do they want to tell their story?
I'm pretty sure that these kids want to talk about their story. I don't think they feel that they can. I don't think they feel that it's something they're really allowed to do. What I like to do is ask questions just about where are you from? How long did it take you to get here? And right away, they start opening up about everything else. I ask like one or two questions and they continue for like half an hour. So I feel like they need somewhere to vent, or they need someone to tell their story to, someone that's actually going to listen. I don't think they get the opportunity a lot from what they've experienced. It's not something that's done.
You've heard now dozens of these stories. What in fact is the story of these kids? What are you hearing?
A lot of the things that are coming up are not so much about what the journey was to the United States. Some of these kids are out for a week, maybe 2 weeks. Some kids have even been like trying to get to the States for months. But I was so surprised to hear that most of the stories are all about what it's like in what they call La Hielera, which is the detention centers where they're held.
They call it La Hielera.
Yes.
And what does La Hielera mean?
Well, La Hielera, it's pretty much like a cooler. And one kid, because we in our facility have a kitchen, and he's like, you know what it's like in the walk-in freezer downstairs or in the walk-in refrigerator. He's like, just picture being in there all day, 24/7 for like up to a week. He's like, that's how cold it is. They're being detained in these facilities where it's like being in a walk-in cooler pretty much. And they don't have any windows. The windows that they do have, if they get near the windows, they've seen guards actually beat people up. They don't know if it's daytime or nighttime. They said that they get fed twice a day, and it's bologna sandwiches that are usually frozen and breakfast burritos. Some kids said they only got fed once a day. There's like a room that usually fits about 40, 50 people where they cram in about 95 people to 100 people in the room. One kid expressed that a lot of people sleep standing up because there's just no room to actually lay down. The kids that are there for like a week to like 10 days, they said that during that time they didn't get to shower, they don't get to brush their teeth. They share a bathroom with like 80 other people. And yeah, that's kind of what these kids are experiencing.
There's been a lot of reporting now talking about what is motivating the kids to be moving north. From the stories that you're hearing, what is motivating these kids to leave?
There's definitely a theme. I think a lot of kids that I work with are leaving because of the gang violence in their home countries. I keep hearing stories about the parents that are in the States calling to bring their kids because they're getting threats from the different gangs. There was this one case where one of the kids that was in our facility had to come to the United States because there were threats made to his family and one of his relatives was actually murdered. There was another case where it was five kids, five brothers and sisters that came to our facility because their mom was kidnapped and murdered, all because of money and gang violence. A lot of the participants that I talked to have expressed not wanting to be in gangs, but the gang members personally going to their house all the time asking for them. And in those situations, if you don't really listen to them, it's danger on your family. 12, 13 years old, you feel like the only thing that you can do is either come to the States or join their gang. And it's gotten so bad that making that week-long journey to an unexpected country is safer than staying home.
In the facility where you work, what is the general attitude of some of your coworkers towards these young people?
I think a lot of the people that work there started off with really great intentions. It just becomes harder to get emotionally involved. So it's kind of like closing people off. In order to protect themselves, it's kind of like, I'm not going to emotionally attach myself. There's a lot of reprimanding for behaviors that normal 13, 14-year-old kids do. It's a lot of discipline. A lot of the work is, don't do this, do this, go to your room. And that's pretty much the conversation. One of the reasons is because we are so understaffed. There really isn't room to always sit down and have conversations. There are a few people that make it a point to sit down and talk to them, even if it's for 2 or 3 minutes. But yeah, like I said, I think a lot of people that are there, it's kind of hard to get attached to a particular kid. Or
who are they released to, if there's any way to give a sense of that?
When I first started, most of the kids would get sent to a family member here in the States. And then from there, they would meet for immigration court and determine whether they get sent back. So that part of the process, we don't have any access to. Lately, maybe 35% of the kids are getting transferred to different facilities instead of going home. So instead of getting unified with family here in the States, they're just getting transferred to a different facility. I hear these stories over and over and over again, and it's You know that the kids are telling the truth because there's kids that left 2-3 months ago that say the same thing as the kid that just got here yesterday. So these two kids never had any communication in order to, like, oh, well, let's say this so it looks like this. It's definitely something that's real and it's a problem. And sitting down with them during their free time or just, like, watching them play games amongst each other, they're still regular 13, 14-year-old kids. Regardless of what they've been through, their attitude is so... It's kind of nice to see, but it's also really sad to think that they have gone through this.
What is the story or the issue that you think Americans need to know about this if they say, but this has nothing to do with me? Why do you think that it has to do with them?
I think it's important for people to know about what's going on because this could be happening to anybody. This kind of treatment and the things that are happening can happen to anyone. And I think it's important that the stories are told so that regardless of what the population is, people know what their rights are and people know that they have support. I think even if this was happening in any other country, if any other country was doing what we were doing, we would be looking at them like, we need to start rallying, like, this is not fair, you know? And I think we need to kind of look at ourselves and look at what we're doing to these kids and to people in general and, like, the treatment that they're getting. I don't think it's too much to ask to treat people like people.
Our interviewee, Kay, works in a facility that receives migrant children after they are detained by immigration authorities. This is what a whistleblower sounds like. Someone just like you.